John, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks very much.
John, why cardiology? Not why medicine, but why cardiology?
Might sound strange, but it dates back to when I was 15 years old. So that through my father, I got involved in the St. John Ambulance. And then back in those days, the ambulance was run by volunteers. So
yes.
At the age of 15, 16, I was working on the ambulances on the weekends. And so seeing the heart patients and that. And so even from school, I was interested in doing studying heart disease. Yeah.
Because often, and when you think about ambulances, that was the thing that they mostly catered for, wasn't it? Heart attacks at home.
That's
that
right.
They were rushing. Nowadays,
yes.
It's quite much more diverse.
Yeah.
So medicine and then obviously cardiology as a result of that. And then many cardiologists go into practice or go into very thin, narrow areas. My husband had atrial fibrillation and in Melbourne, and of all the things, his doctor was actually Paul Sparks. His name was Sparks, which was very much about electronics in the heart. It was quite bizarre. You don't have that same situation,
no,
Beltrami.
No,
But why then did you take it down the road of research in particular? And the areas of research have been phenomenal.
So before I did medicine, I actually did science because at high school I didn't have the grades to get into medicine. So and the science years were inspirational because it really taught me how to think. And from there, I wanted to do research so that even though at the age of 21, I knew I wanted to do medicine, got into medicine, wanted to do cardiology, but then I wanted to go on and do research because of the inspiration from the science years.
What do you think has been the trigger for, you've done some really interesting areas. Why did you choose these particular areas within cardiac research?
For the same reason I got into medicine, it's all about the patients. The patients have been the inspiration all the way along because as a doctor, you get to treat patients, but then doing clinical research, the impact of what you do has much broader and a broader group of patients because you actually find out how to treat these. And a lot of the work that we did also was sort of making diagnoses that previously hadn't been made and sort of characterising new diseases and that. So that was all quite exciting.
Give me an example.
So probably there are two at the moment that Adelaide's regarded as the centre in the world for these areas. So one is what's called the coronary slow flow phenomenon.
Yes, which I'm still trying to get my head around.
It's actually fairly straightforward because what it is that people who have chest pain, that sounds like it's coming from the heart, they'll often have like an exercise test. If the exercise test is abnormal, they'll then go on and do an angiogram. And in the angiogram, it's just having a look at the arteries of the heart to see if there's any blockages there. Now, if there's no blockages, it's often thought that therefore the pain couldn't be coming from the heart. But in this group of patients, what you see is that there's no blockages in the heart, but the dye goes very slowly. And having met these people, the pain sounded like it was coming from the heart. So I thought it must be coming from the heart. So we started doing some tests and showed that what the problem was not in the large vessels, which you can see in the angiogram, but the microscopic ones that you can't see. And at first it was thought, you know, perhaps this was just an artifact we're looking at. But then we actually found a treatment for it. The disappointing thing was that the treatment that we found was then withdrawn because of problems that it was encountered with the treatment. But the satisfaction on the patient's faces when you explain the pain you're getting is coming from the heart. We just need to find the right treatment
for
it. And hence, that's why the research is so important.
You also, with a colleague, developed the first coronary database in South Australia. How has that had an impact on South Australians?
That's had a big impact. So this is a statewide angiogram database. So the angiogram tests we're talking about, what we do is everybody that's admitted to a public hospital, we have a look at are there any complications associated with the procedure, but then we also try and characterise the conditions that the patients have. And these have led to a number of studies, a number of grants that we've been successful with in this coronary angiogram database of South Australia, so CADOSA. And around the world, because of the way that we've set it up, it's enabled us to sort of collaborate with the United States so that we're doing work with them. It also means that in Australia, the only city or the only state that can benchmark as to how we're performing in our angiograms with the Americans is South Australia. So again, something that's unique with this.
And a leader nationally. Taken the lead.
Yes. Yeah.
One of the things that I think that also, as you have been obviously in this area now for a number of years, technology has changed things dramatically. Not just technology in being in for diagnosis, but actually in being able to share information. Where once it would have been a facsimile or even a telex and a long, lengthy a set of documents across the world. By the time it was recovered, all of those sort of things. Now it's all very instant, you know, email, electronic devices, being able to do 3D printing. All of that has really impacted medical research in more dramatically than most people realise.
Certainly has. It enables us to collaborate with our colleagues overseas much more readily. Mm. I mean, when I first started years ago to collaborate with people overseas, we had to fax them, and then the next day you'd come back getting another fax as a response.
Mm.
But now it's instantaneous. I mean, even 2 hours ago I was doing emails collaborating with colleagues overseas in projects that we're working on at the moment. So it's really opened up the world.
But it also must have great satisfaction for when you have someone in front of you who you know that something is not right and that diagnosis, and being able to send out an email around the world. Has anyone had a look at this, or have you seen anything similar to this? Have you got a patient that might have experienced it? And to be able to have that instant ability to move things at a much faster pace, isn't it?
So we have that even on a much more regular basis, actually, within the hospital, because when we're on call for the hospital, because we also cover the country areas, we will have general practitioners from the rural areas emailing us or sending us ECGs to help them interpret what the findings are, and so therefore the treatment of the patient and that. So it certainly is a big progress. Whereas before they could only describe it, but now you can actually see it.
One of the other things that I find really interesting is that you're involved in ethnic differences in coronary spasm, and particularly between Japanese and Caucasians. I have a very good friend whose wife is Japanese and he's Caucasian. So I'm really, and they've got obviously a blended family. So what's how did this come about and what does it mean?
So part of my PhD, I spent 12 months in Rome working with a tremendous clinician, Attilio Masri, and who really was a great thinker and taught me to listen to patients.
It's nowhere near Tokyo, I have to say.
No, but he kept talking about how there's differences between the Caucasians and the Japanese. And so having been to Japan for a two-month youth exchange, even though I don't speak any Japanese, I knew what the culture was like and what they were like to work with. So the Italians sent me to Japan to undertake this study where people, after they'd had a heart attack, we did a test looking for coronary artery spasm. And whereas in the Italians, about 38% of them, we could produce coronary artery spasm, in the Japanese, it was 80%.
Wow.
So much more prevalent. And that's why the Japanese are sort of leaders in the world in terms of coronary artery spasm, because they firstly look for it, whereas here in Australia, in Adelaide here, we're one of the only centres that look for coronary artery spasm, and we don't do it as regularly as the Japanese. And so part of the problem before I went to Japan was it actually that the Japanese looked for it and that's why they found it, or was it that it was actually more prevalent? And this study where we compared the Italians and the Japanese, it was clearly more prevalent amongst the Japanese.
And what does that mean, having the spasm?
Right. So spasm is another example where you can have an angiogram that doesn't show any blocks, but the artery can go into spasm. And so that when you're doing the angiogram, you may not see anything, but 2 minutes later it can go into spasm. So that's where it's different than a set of concrete pipes, because they're dynamic and they keep changing all the time. And so this is why sometimes it's difficult to diagnose people's heart disease. So what we do is, when we're doing an angiogram, we try and bring on the spasm to make that diagnosis. And a number of people around town that's been very helpful in making the diagnosis for them. And then we know that we need to treat this condition, because it can be quite serious at times.
Is it preventable?
Not so much preventable, because we're still trying to work out what's the actual cause of it. because we don't see it as often in the Caucasians as the Japanese.
I think one of the other things that's fascinating about medical research is the fact is that you sometimes come into the middle of a story. You don't know why it happens. You don't know how to fix it, but it's there. And so you actually are in the middle. You have to start reading the book a little bit going backwards and a little bit going forwards until you actually find a loop that connects everything. Yeah. And that must be also the challenge, and this is why I'm in awe of researchers, is the challenge to be able to think that way, of being able to be both sides at the same time to try and find a solution.
That's why I'm so lucky, because the clinical work's the same, because sometimes the standard, what you read in the textbooks and the patient who's having a heart attack should come in with this, this and this, they don't come in with that. And so then you start to try and work out why and go back and ask the patient what was the symptoms you actually had when this started. And then they often give you the clue. That's why, again, listening to the patients is very important. Well, so that's something I try to get across to the medical students in particular, that that's what they need to do, because we tend to put a lot of reliance on some of our fancy technology, but going back to basics and listening to the patient, that's certainly what my Italian professor taught me.
I think that that is true mostly. You know, I always think about the same. If you go to a vet, the animal can't talk. So it's actually... the parent of that animal being able to say, well, he doesn't eat the food the same way, or he's not walking the same way. It's actually the observations that can be such an impact. One of the things that I am interested, obviously because I'm a woman, is this obstructive CAD and non-obstructive CAD in women. First of all, what's CAD? And then and then what does it mean in particular with women's heart disease?
So CAD's coronary artery disease.
Right.
So it dates back...
God, they've got too many of these.
Too many abbreviations, that's right. It dates back to, again, the problem of the patient who's got chest pain, but you do the angiogram test where you're looking for the blockages, so the coronary artery disease, and you don't see any. Now, when I was a student, what they used to teach us is that the standard thing, if you've got chest pain, you do an exercise test. If the exercise test is abnormal, you do the angiogram, you should see the blockages. If there's no blockages, that meant the pain didn't that the pain wasn't coming from the heart. This is particularly prevalent in women. And so they were saying that instead of saying that there was something wrong with the angiogram, we said there's something wrong with the exercise test. And women typically have false positive exercise tests, we used to say. But now what we've realised is that, no, in actual fact, the exercise test was right. It's just the angiogram doesn't show us the microscopic blood vessels, and this is much more prevalent in women. And so certainly some of the colleagues that I work with overseas are sort of leaders in this area, so it's a privilege to work with them.
The Hospital Research Foundation, you are a board member, have made a huge contribution, particularly in the last 5 to 10 years in this state. Started out at the Queen Elizabeth, has become really the leaders, not only in raising awareness, but also often supporting research that is a little bit outside of the norm and a bit challenging in some cases, but really necessary, because so much happens from the unknown or the unusual that then becomes into the mainstream. It must be a very rewarding experience having the opportunity of sitting on the board, but also being a recipient of some of those funds.
The Research Foundation is absolutely vital for the state, because it supports the clinical research, in particular the translational research, as you mentioned earlier. And being a researcher, the only way you can do research is to obtain grants. And the grants are very competitive, because only the best apply for them. In a lot of them, only 10% will get the grants. So you can't always count on being successful. So the more opportunities that you have, the better the chance you have. Now, the great thing with the Research Foundation is it's local here. So it's the local people you're competing against, but also it's being well supported, so that this research then can go on to obtain more national funding as well. So I'm pleased that just the last week, thanks to the work that the Research Foundation is sponsoring, is that we've just achieved a world first, in that we've had studied the first patient with a condition that's called MANOCA. So MANOCA, I'll tell you the technical word first and then translate it for you, is MANOCA stands for myocardial infarction with non-obstructive coronary arteries. So in English, what that means is a heart attack, but you don't see any blockages in the arteries of the heart. So again, some of my colleagues used to argue, well, then they couldn't have had a heart attack, but the blood test shows you that they had a heart attack. And so It was actually here in Adelaide that we coined the term Minocca, so we defined that. We've done the key studies, have been done again here in Adelaide to show the importance of this disease. And so with along with Sweden, Norway, and we're waiting for also for the United States and the UK, we're now actually doing the first study where we're trying to find a treatment for this Minocca. And so just over a week ago, we had the first patient in the world to be recruited to a study to try and look for a treatment for this particular condition.
That's fantastic. John, thank you so much for giving up some of your Sunday and talking to us and the audience. It is a real honour and a privilege. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.